In about 24 hours or so, 24 hours after President Barack Obama nominated Elena Kagan to succeed retiring Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, we're getting a lot of arguments on both sides. Political forces on the right and on the left are lining up the pros and cons of getting Kagan onto the high court.
The standard of scrutiny is clearly much higher now. Now we must determine whether someone who is a member of the president's administration will be an independent and impartial jurist on the nation's highest court.
That was Republican Senate and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell saying the stakes are high in a lifetime appointment. But our listeners are also think it's important to examine every single aspect of a candidate's qualifications. They've called us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or posted to thetakeaway.org.
This is Nick in Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Kagan is a person who is to the right of the person she's going to be replacing. By Obama nominating someone to Stevens' right to avoid a battle, to me, is a sign of weakness and being cowed by the opposition.
How strong is that opposition? Well, Takeaway's Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick has the answer to that. We've got a kind of preview of the upcoming confirmation hearings. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning, Celeste.
First, let me just establish, do the Republicans have the ability to stop this confirmation from happening?
Well, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. I mean, there have been nominations in the past that were shoo-ins that came close to failing. I think that Robert Bork's nomination several administrations ago was considered very strong until it tanked. So they definitely have the ability to slow it down. And I think that is the strategy right now. I don't think most people think they have the ability to stop it, even though we don't know what could happen between now and the end of this. But slowing it down seems to be very important. Get this battle as close to the November elections as possible. These are ideological fights, keep in mind. These gin up the base. The closer you can get this to the election, the better, I think, if you're a Republican strategist. So slowness, I think, is the key here.
Well, we just heard Mitch McConnell saying that there's a higher standard of scrutiny now, and he's concerned that a member of the president's administration would be independent. But the previous administration nominated someone to the high court who was part of the administration.
They did. Well, and look what happened to Harriet Myers. She was part of the, she was another nominee who was part of the administration, and she failed. You know, Celeste, the first 24 hours, the period that we're in now, the first 24 to 48 hours of a Supreme Court nomination is all about forming the narrative and framing the nominee as best you can on both sides. Keep in mind, this announcement came out when? On a Monday morning from the White House, and there's a reason for that. There were no votes in the Senate yesterday, which meant most senators weren't in town. So the White House takes advantage of that by getting the Washington press corps to itself as much as possible for at least a few hours before enough Republicans are around to give their narrative and their framing of this nominee. So that's exactly what's going on now. And I think from the White House, you're seeing a narrative of somebody who has experience at Harvard Law School, who is a solicitor general, has a lot of experience around the court, clerked for Justice Thurgood Marshall, has some real world experience. And on the Republican side, you heard Mitch McConnell say, hear him suggest, she doesn't have a lot of real world experience. She's never been a judge. This is the Supreme Court. This is not a junior judgeship in a district court somewhere. She needs to be heavily vetted in a detailed way. And Republicans are promising to go down into that record. That's exactly what they're going to do.
Okay, well, we don't have a whole record of her decisions from the bench to kind of get a clue on, but we do have her Senate confirmation hearings when she was heard during her hearings for Solicitor General last year. And here's how she described herself.
I think I bring up a lifetime of learning and study of the law, and particularly of the constitutional and administrative law issues that form the core of the court's docket. I think I bring up some of the communication skills that have made me, I'm just going to say, a famously excellent teacher.
Okay, well, that's how she describes herself. Are the Republicans already getting a narrative going on how they describe her?
Absolutely, and a lot of it has to do with that teacher comment she made, her time at Harvard. They say, yes, it's impressive she was dean of Harvard Law School, but while she was there, she made some controversial decisions. She banned military recruiters from the campus in order to uphold protests that were going on around the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that don't allow gays and lesbians to serve openly. And that is a very controversial decision, many Republicans already branding her, here's the narrative again, anti-military. You're going to hear that over and over, I think. In fact, the one Republican senator who has already said he'll vote against her, used that as part of his justification, James Inhofe of Oklahoma. So yeah, so her time at Harvard and her decision on the military is an important one. Also, I'll say quickly, Celeste, her time at Harvard, you're hearing Republicans say, well, she's been an academic. She spent some time in academia. That's sort of code when you hear academia. I think it's code for maybe elitist.
Well, let's hear Mitch McConnell saying kind of that.
It strikes me that if a nominee does not have judicial experience, they should have substantial litigation experience. Ms. Kagan has neither.
Is that what McConnell is talking about there?
It's part of it, and part of what you're hearing there. You know, everyone says they're happy to have somebody nominated from outside what's called the judicial monastery. And at the same time, when somebody is nominated from outside that monastery, you hit them for not having judicial experience. All about the framing again. And I think you're seeing a theme there from Inhofe and McConnell in that
way. But how much of this is bluster? Are the Republicans just kind of making a storm in a teapot, and in the end they themselves accept that this will be a relatively smooth confirmation hearing, as the White House suggests?
Well, that's possible. But again, I think a lot of this is about the speed of this nomination. If people accept that she will eventually be confirmed, you want as much political advantage, frankly, out of it as you can. And I think getting it as close to the election is important for Republicans, for the base.
Right. Todd Zwilla, Takeaway Washington correspondent. We're asking you, what do you think diversity means? What does it mean to have diversity on the Supreme Court?
If diversity is more important to you than intellectual honesty, how about some high school dropouts, maybe with a criminal record?
Give us your take at 8778-MY-TAKE, or you can post to thetakeaway.org.
Continuing now with the Todd Zwilla, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Todd, you know, this whole confirmation process has changed a lot in the last generation and a half. Wouldn't you agree?
There's no question about it, John. It absolutely has.
It's really all about legal credentials and the American Bar Association rating of these individuals, which used to be one fact among many, has actually become much, much more important. And now we're talking about whether you've been a judge for how long, you've only been Solicitor General for a year. It seems to me it naturally tends to narrow the Supreme Court nominees to always being in the legal profession, not like a William O. Douglas, who, you know, had a much wider background than some of the nominees that we, you know, were familiar with during the FDR days, who had nothing to do with the legal profession at all. Do senators believe that the whole process has narrowed things?
Well, I think some of them probably do believe that, and you see some of these hearings becoming more and more contentious as politically motivated, politically framed questions are asked, either to put a nominee in a box. Nobody sometimes expects answers to these questions, but it's important to have them asked for one political constituency or another. You know, John, it was Elena Kagan herself in 1995 who wrote that judicial Supreme Court nominations had become vapid and hollow affairs, where real questions are not answered and nominees are not pinned down on anything having to do with their judicial philosophy. Now, she was a staffer at the time, frustrated that a judicial nominee sitting across from her wasn't answering any of the questions. So Republicans are now saying, interestingly, oh, vapid and hollow affair? Well, we'll make sure we ask you some extremely pointed questions and get some answers on your views for once.
Jeffrey Rosen was talking about that yesterday. He's a professor up at George Washington University. He was saying that being on the record on saying there should be probing questions, that this needs to be a much more serious, intellectually rigorous discussion, is something she may come to regret at her confirmation hearings. Look at this history, Todd, because I know you're obsessed with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know the comment earlier that Elena Kagan is a moderate liberal, not as liberal as John Paul Stevens. You would go
right,
along
a moderate
with that, right?
Liberal. I got it.
Right?
Yeah.
So she's a shift to the right in theory. If she replaces John Paul Stevens,
right?
You know who John Paul Stevens replaced?
Oh boy,
William O. Douglas.
Right.
Who
Indeed.
Was more liberal than John Paul Stevens? And together, John Paul Stevens and William O. Douglas held that seat for 71 years total.
Right. And so
36
and so
years for William O. Douglas and, you know, decades for John Paul Stevens.
And Elena Kagan's only 50 years old. So how many more decades, if confirmed, does she have on the court? Probably three at least, or at least we hope she has a long and productive life on the court. So it's interesting how the entire frame of the court can shift, even as presidents replace one ideological like with another ideological like, how within the frame of a court that has shifted right over the last 30 years.
So
how that can all change.
Don't forget that we had a listener joking about getting a high school dropout, but remember, Robert Jackson never graduated from law school, and now we've got the possibility of having justices, all of whom came from Harvard or Yale.
Before we go, Todd, is there the chance that a president would ever in our lifetime nominate someone completely out of the legal profession, a plumber? Just anyone, a regular person.
Oh, God. It's hard to imagine right now that somebody who had at least not been to law school would ever be nominated to the court. It seems like in this environment where so many political issues are charged right through the judicial system, they wouldn't be branded as being unqualified.
Well, it's an interesting take on diversity. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.